What's up, everybody, and welcome back to Cindy's Birthday Party, the hip-hop podcast that looks at hip-hop and rap music from a philosophical and historical perspective. My name is Danny. I am one of three hosts. My co-hosts here are with me, and I've got my man Eric, a.k.a. Big E.
What's happening, y'all? How y'all doing today?
And I've also got my other partner here, Zay, who is one of the co-hosts of Zay, Live from Zay's House.
What up, social media world?
And we are going to have a really good discussion today, I believe. So as you know, if you've listened to our other podcasts, well, first let me say, for those of you who are new, you're looking at the name Cindy's Birthday Party, you're wondering what that has to do with hip-hop. It is an homage to the creator of the culture, DJ Kool Herc. The first time he did what he did, what we now know as hip-hop and hip-hop culture and music, it was at his sister Cindy's birthday party. So if it wasn't for Cindy's birthday party, we would maybe never even have this. So it's just a way of a tip of the cap to him.
It'll be called Danny's birthday party.
Hey, it probably should be anyway. So anyway, if you want more information on that, you can always go and listen to our first episode, Welcome to Cindy's Birthday Party, and we go a little more in depth to it. So today, we normally talk about the rappers, right?
We
touch on the MCs.
We touch more on MCs.
Right. Mm-hmm. And you will hear me specifically from time to time. I try to sometimes distinguish between saying rap music and hip-hop culture.
Right.
Even though today the two have become synonymous, right?
Right.
So people always think of them as the same thing. But really and truly, if we're going to, as purists, we know that rap is the music of the culture.
Right.
But our show is about the culture itself.
Right.
So today we're going to explore some other parts of that culture, mm-hmm. and it's going to be primarily the fashion of hip-hop culture. So rap is the music of the culture. The fashion of the culture is what we're going to discuss today.
Mm-hmm.
And so, Eric, this was a topic that you had actually come up with. And if you can go into a little bit as to what made you really kind of think about this.
Well, just thinking about my own childhood and probably the childhood of most, let's just say most black kids growing up when hip hop first got started, we saw these particular people, especially when videos first came out. We saw mm-hmm. Run DMC. Mm-hmm. We saw the fashion, the granddad looking hats with mm-hmm. you know rope chains, leather jackets,
yep.
and an Adidas sweatsuit underneath, which looked odd, but in a way it was like,
we thought it was pretty cool because
cool.
it was different.
Right, yeah. It's different. Right. And so you get them, you get LL with Kangol hats, and just you hear it in the things that they're rapping about. They're rapping about clothes and shoes. Mm-hmm. Dougie Fresh with Bally shoes, everything mm-hmm. was that, and you know, that kind of stuff. So it just kind of just triggered my idea, you know, okay, yeah, fashion has gone on, you know, throughout the decades of rap, there have been, you know, these fashion things. So, you know, 80s, 90s, 2000s, and we're still talking about clothing and designers and all this stuff. So it just kind of triggered, you know, that's what just triggered it, really.
And that makes sense. I know that you can't separate the two.
No.
Right.
Like, you know, you can't even talk about rappers without talking about fashion because rappers talk about fashion.
Right, because exactly. that's what they talk
exactly.
about.
Right.
Exactly.
So that's that's like one of the topics that you always
it's
have.
Almost a requirement to be a rapper. Like, okay, I got to talk really about is. Money,
right.
jewelry,
yep.
what I'm wearing,
yep.
what I'm driving.
Yep.
You know, those things.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know.
Definitely. I think for me, the thing that stood out the most is how much hip-hop culture has affected and influenced
yes.
the greater American culture.
Yes.
You know, especially when I look at, first of all, let's be honest about this, okay? So hip-hop culture, black culture, has always influenced American pop culture
no
since
doubt.
The beginning of whatever.
Yep, no
you know?
Doubt.
And I think that maybe hip-hop culture is the first time throughout that kind of, through maybe in American history where the a lot of times the black people who were doing the influence and maybe got the credit for it that they may not have gotten with rock and roll.
Right.
Or when they had influence with jazz or something like that.
Exactly.
And
it
that
was,
makes it,
yeah, I'm sorry, Dan, I didn't mean to
no,
cut
it's okay.
you off. It was ours along with hip hop,
right.
so to speak. And
right.
so, like you say, you can go back through the 50s rock and roll culture, but yeah, we were taking that from rock
right.
and roll, leather
right.
jackets,
right.
permed hairdos, that's
mm-hmm.
you know, the same thing the white rock and roll guys
yeah.
were,
right.
were looking like. So
right.
there was no difference. But once hip hop came into play, there was that difference of you see guys with, you know, the Kango hats and big necklaces and, right, you know, leather jackets and things of that nature and sweatsuits. That kind of was, that was us. You
right.
know,
that's
so.
A good point.
Well, I would even go so far to say that at the in its beginning stages, hip hop was because everything has a beginning, right? So hip hop was actually influenced by other genres at that time. Like when you see Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five, they weren't dressing in the gold chains and the Adidas with the Fat Boy, you know, laces in them. They actually looked like an R&B group, to be honest with you.
More like punk rockers. They had chains and
with the chains and
leotards
and
necklaces. Yeah, and that kind of.
And they were dressing
look.
A lot like the disco guys.
Yes, exactly. Absolutely.
Because, you know, a lot of like Sugar. Remember, KRS-One said before sampling loops, rappers wore bell bottom Lee suits.
Yeah,
right. That's
so
true.
Guys weren't dressing that way. That's one of the things that, you know, we always talk about Run DMC, right? Because you can't really have a conversation about. Without putting Run DMC in there, whether you're talking about rapping or the sound, the look, whatever.
Yeah, but I would say if you say when it became the chains and the troop suits and all that, I do think that Run DMC were like the catalyst of that when it switched up from the leather spikes and chains to the whole B-boy stances.
They were the first ones to bring B-boy culture to the forefront.
Yes.
There's no doubt about
and
that.
From what I understand, they were searching for a look, so to speak.
Right.
Run had brought it to Russell Simmons, you know, what are we going to do as far as a look and appearance?
Yeah.
And they initially came up with, they were leaning towards almost stuff like what Grandmaster Flash and whatnot were wearing. And they said they wanted to go away from that. And when they got with Jam Master Jay, he was already like this.
Right, that was really
this was
Jay's
his
look.
Because
Jay was the street dude. Remember, Run and DMC were the
college kids.
Right. They said, well, why not? Let's just go with what Jay's wearing, that kind of look. And that's how that kind of took off with the, you know, the hats and leather jackets on the sweatsuit look. You know,
Eric, so. You know, it's so funny you mentioned that, and you've probably seen, like, if you've ever seen pictures of Run DMC, like, really early when they first started, and what they had on, and when they had the little afros and everything.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, it's one of these, I forgot one of the pioneers, I cannot remember his name right now, but again, I'll reference thefoundation.com with Jay Kwan. Mm-hmm. He talks about interviewing this guy and that. He was the host at the Fever the first time Run DMC stepped on stage at the Fever.
Right.
And they got booed off stage.
Right.
And he said they were up there with some checkerboard shirts or something crazy like that.
But you know what's funny about that, though? There's, I'm not sure which video. I believe it's a, might be an African Bambaataa video, and they're showing just the kids breakdancing in the background. They're not wearing anything that that specially says hip-hop.
Right.
It's just random long sleeve shirts and somebody got a Kango on or just a pair of jeans and whatever polo shirts.
Yep.
So there was no real look to like just grab onto. So in a way like Boo and Run DMC, you know, like, come on, what the hell are y'all talking about?
And
I get it. Y'all ain't looking no different than what they were looking, but you know,
it's probably over their music.
Fickle kids,
and
you know.
The funny thing about it is just as a little quick side note, man, everybody in their beginning careers, everybody got booed off of stage.
It seems that way.
Everybody got booed off stage.
If not everybody, a lot of people
who ended up being big got booed.
It just shows, you know, I guess you have to be persistent with whatever you're doing.
Right, definitely.
Except Mose. Mose ain't never got booed off stage, but that's a whole different story.
Folks, for those who don't know, Zay was a part of a rap group called Mose in the 90s here in Atlanta. And so that's what that reference is for those of you who don't know.
Now
they have officially been booed.
Let's make that official.
There you go, Zay.
You
Mose
wrong,
is
man.
Officially
man.
Wrong.
I
just,
man.
I had to
it's
put
official.
You, yeah, I had to make you feel at home with the rest of these sorry rappers out here who got booed off the stage.
Yeah, I've actually heard the Mose CD is actually pretty good.
Look, man, just like I said, you can throw the second, 30 seconds, get ready for
now
the
you realize
second.
You're wasting 10 of your seconds by saying throw up the clock.
All right, whatever, man. It ain't going to take but 20 anyway, so here we go. Look, man, my cousin, 15. When I talked to my cousin this morning, right, that's the first thing that come to his mind. Hey, man, we got to put Mose back together. We got to. I'm like, bro, I'm 45 years old, man. Come on. I can't.
Now, you said 45. You stuttered a little bit. You sure that's the age? You're a little bit older than that.
Well, I'll be 46 in November, so that's why I stuttered a little bit. Let my wife tell it I'm 50, but that's a whole other story, too. So back to the subject, man.
Let's I got you. So when we look at hip-hop fashion, right, I guess to give it some context, if you look at, I guess we would start with black fashion before hip-hop.
Right.
Yes. So and for the sake of this conversation, we know that rap music started in 1979, but right. hip-hop culture starts in 73.
Right.
So we're going to go a little before 79. That's right. Cool because we're talking about the culture more so right. large than just rap music.
Right, right, right.
But I know that, Eric, one of the things you had mentioned, too, was, you know, if you look at black fashion or right. fashion in general from the 30s and 40s, like if you think of Cab Calloway, right?
Right.
Or Count Basie. Or Duke Ellington, maybe not Duke, because he was more of a classic dress. But Cab Calloway, he wanted to be as outrageous as he could,
right?
So he had the big zoot suits on,
right. with baggy pants, etc.
Right,
yeah.
right.
And they were loud colors too, by the way.
Loud colors,
bright orange,
and you know, and he's got the hair processed, as Fred yeah. Sanford said, fried, dyed, and
laid to the side.
you know,
but that was their thing at that yeah. time,
right? It was what black people at the time tried to gravitate towards, to not be just part of the mix, so to speak.
Right.
You know, to conform in some way. Right. right. Somewhat to not conform with whatever else is going on. And that kind of just kept going 30s and 40s. Now, like I said earlier, mentioned about in the 50s when rock and roll became prevalent,
mm-hmm.
we attached ourselves to it in certain ways. Think about this. Remember Sha-na-na?
Yes.
So the black dude was on there, and of course, there's no individualism by him. He just had on like a Letterman jacket or some sort of like gang style looking little jacket and jeans, and you know, he was just like the rest of them. So yeah, he's considered cool amongst his peers because they all, you know, whoever dressed like that was considered cool at that time. But it was nothing that stood out where right. he could say it's ours, you know.
Right, so. Right. I think that when you're looking at that fashion too, because one of the things I kept thinking about was especially where hair is concerned, right?
Right.
Like I think about Cab Calloway's hair.
Yeah.
Then I think about Lil Richard's hair yep. and Chuck Berry's hair.
Yep. True.
And everybody's got a perm, you know. Yes. James Brown, I mean, I know he went through a period in the 70s where he wore Afro, but for right. the most part, James Brown's wearing a perm.
Yep.
It's not until the 60s
yes.
where black people start to wear their hair
the way it's supposed to
in a natural
be.
Form anyway. Well, the dudes anyway, you know.
Right.
But because the women always have stricter guidelines
right.
of conformity than men, that's probably a topic for a whole nother show.
Right. right. but you know what? I don't mean to cut you off, Danny, but like – with the 60s, I started, you know, most of the guys were wearing regular suits. Like, they actually fit. The suits actually fit. Like, they would. I remember my dad telling me that he used to get his, when he was a teenager, he used to get his clothes custom made. Like, because it wasn't that
right,
expensive.
Right, it wasn't that expensive to go to a tailor.
Yeah, anymore. It yeah. was so it was easy to go to a tailor. So,
well, go ahead, Zay. I'm sorry. You also, one thing you do have to consider as well, this was during the Civil Rights Movement.
Right,
and
right.
you sort of had to, the conformity levels were way higher. If
right.
You, if
were.
You want to
right.
be considered a respectful
right.
black
so
citizen,
right.
so you wore true. A suit.
You wore a suit
you
everywhere
like
you went. Yes.
The white people across town or whatever, you looked the part in order
because
to
you
not
to be respected.
Right, because you wanted to be respected.
Right.
So that kind of is the reason why regular suits, like you say, just regular normal suits,
right.
tailor-made,
right.
you know, clean cut. And you see a lot of pictures of
right.
black people clean cut,
right?
You know, black men more
right.
so. Even women too, skirts and
right.
very,
yeah.
you know, nice.
Yeah,
you
look
know.
Right. Like you look at popular groups like the Temptations and the Four Tops and the Spin. Well, I don't know the Spinners, but they were. I think they were
a little bit
70s,
later,
70s.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right, but they were all clean cut, straight, black and white.
And
suits.
That was part of Berry Gordy's thing.
Yeah,
you know, like he wanted them to look acceptable to white America.
Yes, right. yes.
Exactly. So that was part of the whole marketing plan of Motown
right.
is that, you know, we're going to be conformist, we're going to be non-threatening.
Right.
Even though we're still giving you black music.
Right.
but exactly. we're going to give it to you in a package that makes you feel comfortable with it.
Right. And just to kind of like, you know, just like, you know, bring it back to the future or whatever, I think that's one of the things that's so cool about today's fashion is the fact that now there is no necessary way you're supposed to look.
And that's one of the things we're going to build up to.
Right,
that's
exactly.
important Definitely that you mentioned that.
Yeah.
Because after that period, when you get into the 70s, and brothers are a little more militant, right?
Right.
I was just going to say.
Afros, like, you know, an afro is not new, but a big afro was something that was more of a 70s feel.
Afros and a leather jacket.
Having braids was more of a, was considered to be more of a militant look
in some
aspects. Yes. Not maybe braids not necessarily militant, but something that was ours.
Right. And this, I think, is attributed to late 60s. Once again, civil rights being what it is. And we're fighting for a foothold somewhere in this country. Well, you got guys coming back from Vietnam fought for this country and have come back as like a lot of vets did and, you know, were spit on, treated wrongly. But black folks already were treated wrongly before this even happened.
Right.
So then it became, well, we got to stand out in a certain way. Thus, big afros, a lot of cats came back wearing the fatigues that they wore over their army jackets. Black Panthers, another look that kind of stood out, and a lot of young people adopted that sort of that look, leather jackets, combat boots, and just a more, like you say, militant looking stance on things.
Right.
So
And I think I'm glad you mentioned Black Panthers too, because that look was considered militant because of them. Because of what they stood there, because people viewed them that way, whether they were or not.
Right, exactly, yeah.
If you think about it, if you look at Run DMC's look, it actually had an element of the Black Panthers.
It does. It definitely does.
Yeah. So
it does.
I think that's one thing that I always thought that was so cool about hip-hop, is you can take elements of it, whatever your environment is, because the way I dress, I didn't dress like you probably dressed because your environment was different than mine. You know what I'm saying? So, like, I would conform to whatever my environment was, but I would always add elements to from whatever influenced me. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So like, I had friends from the north, and I would add Tim's on top of my rayon shirt that I was wearing. You know what I'm saying? So all the Jordache jeans that I was wearing, instead of me wearing the Dope Bun Nikes, which by the way, look up the Dope Bun Nikes, and you'll know what I'm talking about. But I instead of just wearing that, I would throw a pair of Tim's and some Levi's on. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's like, I think that was one of the things that was so cool about hip-hop, you know?
Well, and then as we come out of the 70s, I guess it's the one thing we have to really discuss when we talk about fashion in the 70s, too, is the disco look, sort of, because it has such an influence on
Jordache
the early hip-hop, you know, to a certain extent. I mean, those who were stars in hip-hop, they had the disco look.
Yes.
The B-boys were wearing something different because they were on the street level.
Right.
So when we look at the early groups, a lot of times, you know, like we mentioned Grandmaster Flash and Furious Five in particular, or they had more of a disco look. Bambada and the Soul Sonic Force had more of a punk look because they were wearing all kinds of outrageous
feathers, and all kind of crazy.
Almost like a Parliament Funkadelic type look.
Similar look.
Similar to Parliament. Yeah, very similar to Parliament in that they wore. So in their cases, maybe they were the ones being influenced instead of being the influencers.
Right, which goes back to my point. I think in hip hop's early stages, because it was his own thing, but it necessarily was not called hip hop at the time. So most of the groups that were coming into the rap game, they were all influenced by their favorite artists.
I just had I do this from time to time. So when you were saying it wasn't necessarily called hip hop, so I was watching a video a few days ago about the name hip hop.
Right.
So Cowboy from Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five, they were giving a party somewhere. It might have been one of Kool Herc's parties, and they had a buddy who was going in the army the next day, and they were messing with him. They threw a party for him because he was getting ready to go in the military, and they're like, "Yeah, you're gonna be out there with a drill sergeant, hip."
And that's how
the name started.
Think about that.
That is absolutely crazy.
And it becomes its own culture.
Because
like,
it really doesn't have anything to do with anything else in
exactly.
the culture. But that's where they said Cowboy was messing with dude, and he's on the mic, and he starts rapping hip-hop, and they started calling it hip-hop.
Hip-hop takes off like that, yeah. Man.
Unrelated, but, simple. You know, I yeah, just...
Very simple.
And, it, when you and trigger to this day, to mind, this day, it's called day. Hip-hop.
Yes.
That is the whole freaking culture. Like,
yes.
That
behind playing that, around with somebody at a party.
Yeah, just, that's crazy,
that's
man.
That's amazing. And it, but that just, it goes to show you, too, like, things in hip-hop are so spontaneous.
Yes.
You know, that's... You can take something like that and it can grow into something else.
Right.
You know? It's kind of like what we were saying with the fashion too, Eric, when we were talking about Jam Master Jay, he was already dressing that way. He's like,
right.
Well, let's start doing this, and now everybody's doing it.
Exactly, yes. Yeah. You know, late 70s, think about it from Herc's time frame, 73. That is 73, 76, you know, on to about 79 is disco culture. A lot of bell bottoms, a lot of Sansibel pants and flare collared shirts and you know, things with lapels and big oversized ties and ruffles, things of that nature.
They was killing them too, by the way.
If they would have kept dressing like that, my dad probably would not have hated rappers so much.
Exactly.
He probably been on them boys sharp.
Boys sharp. Exactly. Right. That's how you're supposed to dress. Take a lesson from that.
With some Stacey's on.
I think my dad's perception of rap changed when they started having the fat boy laces. When you start seeing them Adidas and them Pumas with them fat boy laces, he was like, nah, bro, man, I ain't feeling that.
We would get threatened so much. Yes. You walk out of his house with no shoes tied.
Right. Yes.
You're going to mess your feet up.
Yeah. Yes. So.
I don't know why you wear them sneakers anyway. You can get you some Stacey Adams.
Your dad with them Stacey Adams. Nah.
Funny story, man. And I had to argue with my mom about this too. But one year, my grandmama, she had went to like a Walmart. I don't know if it was Walmart. It was Zaire. They used to sell these shoes called MA100s. And my grandmama bought me them MA100s. Like, you better put them damn fat boys in them shoes.
MA100s.
They were called MA100s, bro.
Sound like fireworks.
Bro.
They might explode on
I was going to say.
There was
like
plastic
tank.
Shoes that started talking as soon as I put them on. I had to argue with my mama to get her to buy me a pair of them suede Pumas, man.
Now, suede Pumas, that is, that makes me think about something. What is more important in early hip hop fashion? Is it the shoes, or is it the clothes, or is it accessories like hats and glasses?
That's a good question.
If I may jump on, I'll probably go with, it's probably somewhat tied between shoes, but I'll say shoes, I'll leave shoes out because quite honestly, kids didn't really care about shoes, or should I say not care about it, but did not take as good of care of their shoes
right.
as we do now.
Yeah.
There are pictures right. of kids, you know, B-boys. They shoes scuffed up as
yes,
hell.
Yes.
Got dirt on them and everything, yeah. but they got fat laces in them.
Right.
So it's
right.
not that they really gave a shit, excuse me, about shoes per se.
Gave a poop.
A poop.
He taught a poop.
Yeah.
we're PG-13
we
here.
Try to be PG-13, right. and I sometimes cross the line.
I'm just joking, but go ahead.
Hats and things that make you stand out. Kangol
right.
hats. I saw a few pictures of guys with... their belts with money. They had some
right.
sort of money sign belt buckle,
uh-huh.
which is kind of the predecessor to name belts, which we'll get into a
right.
little later on. But just those kind of things, accessories, jewelry. I saw one guy had an earring with a feather hanging off of it. It's things
yeah.
to kind of make you stand out.
Right.
You know,
right.
yeah.
Because it wasn't necessarily the outfits themselves, because the
right.
outfits was pretty much the same. Like, if you
plain.
Had an Adidas suit, you just had an Adidas suit or a Nike suit or whatever.
Right.
It Which, was. By the way, I stole plenty of them from my older brother because he had a job and I didn't. So every time he'd go buy a suit, I just sneak it and wear it to school.
And because we're talking about primarily poor kids.
Right.
Right. So, you know, you might not be able to rock a new pair of fresh Adidas.
Nah,
exactly.
Keep clean
mm-hmm, right.
every day.
Right.
You know, especially when we're talking about early kids in the South Bronx in the late 70s, early 80s. You know?
Unless they were your older brother and you stole them from them, you know, you weren't going to just be rocking no fresh
right.
pair of Adidas every single day.
And I think, too, that maybe when the suede Pumas and suede Adidas came out, that's when kids started to take better care of the shoes because it was suede. Maybe.
I will
yeah.
say that because
Nike yeah.
Cortez had that little suede piece on the front.
Yeah.
Actually, suede Pumas was, about late 70s. My dad was still alive. he actually had a pair of blue suede Pumas, and I wanted some to death, one, because my dad had them, and two, I was noticing that was a look. One of my friends that grew up, he was a friend of my my mother and his mother worked together. And so I ended up, of course, through association, I ended up being friends with him. He's a little older than me. But he had gear because his mom spoiled him to death. He had some suede Pumas, and I thought, hey, I got to get a hold of that.
So, Eric, you and your dad was the same size, and you ain't never steal no clothes from your pops?
I couldn't steal clothes from my dad, being he was about 6'4" or 5" at the time, and I was every bit of 8'9", so, yeah, I wasn't quite
When I was a teenager, me and my dad were the same size, so I stole a lot of his clothes. I stole everybody's clothes if they was if I thought it was fresh, you know what I'm saying? Like, I incorporated everything in hip hop. Like, my dad, of course, he was with the silk suits and the gator shoes.
Right.
And I was like, you know what? I'm finna rock this at school one day. And I remember stealing one of my dad's suits. He didn't know because he was at work. So, and I made sure I had to take it off by the time I got home.
Just going in people's closet.
Man. I straight raided his closet, bro. And I go to school and be like, bro, check out my silk suit.
So, if the shoes themselves in the early stages weren't as important, what about hats, accessories like eyeglasses?
It was mostly the accessories.
So they would be more important than
Because like I said, the suits themselves, the outfits, they never really stood out because everybody wore the same outfit. So it had to be something that made you look different other than the next man.
To stand out a bit because like Danny mentioned, you know, inner city kids, not a whole lot of money. You wore what you had.
Yes.
And then if you could get a Kango hat, you know, if you could get a name belt, you know, whatever. So
I can remember the first time I had seen kids with Kangols on, but the first time I saw a Kangol in the store, they were $25.
Yes.
And they $25 hat was, you know, it was expensive. Yeah.
Exactly. And I think back to that too, like being a teenager, like 13, 14, and wanting those things, and it's $25, which to us now as adults, it's like, oh, man, I'll go throw down $25 on a hat in a minute.
But that would be like $1,000 back then.
Yeah, $25 in the now, give me 4 or 5 of them.
Right, exactly. But back then, it was difficult for you to go to your mom and say to her, hey, Ma, I need $25 to get a hat.
You know what I did to compensate for the lack of $25 that I had? Like I said, we would have to accessorize because of the fact that we didn't have that kind of money. So instead of me saying, Mama, can I have $25 to go buy a Kango, we bought raccoon hats. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, because that was one of the things, too, that kids used to rock, especially like around 84, 85.
Oh, straight raccoons.
Because the Fat Boys wore them, and the Fat Boys were very influential at the time. So you would see the raccoon hats a lot of times.
Yeah.
But at what point then, I know we say, excuse me, Run DMC, 82, 83.
Right.
But when does B-boy culture in general just seem to just take over Black culture or Black youth culture, because that's basically what it was. Like everything that that became popular for us by 86, 87, it was all the stuff that had come from B-Boys.
I would associate it with the movie Crush Groove. I think Crush Groove was one of those movies because when they introduced LL, even though it was almost on a Run DMC style, but he had his own spin to it. You know what I'm saying? Like he started wearing his own thing. Even though he had a small part in the movie, you know what I'm saying? Like, if you look at all the groups that were featured in that particular movie, they all had their own look.
Right.
And it was like, okay, which one of these looks can I emulate without having to spend all my money on it? You know what I'm saying? So me, myself, I would associate it with Crush Groove, me, myself.
Yeah, Crush Groove. Is Beat Street more? Because there's certain stuff in Beat Street from a fashion standpoint. A lot of those movies, I guess, at that time period were influential because they kind of, you know, especially for those of us like myself and like Zay who did not live in New York.
Right.
It kind of brought that hip-hop culture to the rest of the country.
Yes,
and we could actually see, oh, you know, not only is this cool, but this is what they're wearing. So, you know, which was crazy is that we would want to wear a bomber jacket in South Carolina. You only got 3 months to wear this joint.
Exactly.
Not going to be
and in Georgia, it's even less than that.
Right. Yeah. It's right. You know,
where I was, and at the time, I think early 80s, I was last year's in New York, and then we moved to Philly after my father passed. The bomber jacket was huge. And quite honestly, it made a difference if how much fur you had on the hood. The hood went over your head. If it was like, if it looked scraggly or just wasn't enough, you got teased heavily for that.
Right.
So your game had to be on point with certain things.
Yes.
And this requires you, of course, to go to your parents and you have to convince them, hey, I need X amount of dollars for this particular coat, hat, whatever. So it's, you know, it's a strange thing, man. Yeah. It's a phenomenon. So
folks, we're going to stop with our first segment right there. We're going to come back with a second segment on this, and we're going to really get into the influence that rappers had on the fashion, not only in hip-hop culture, but on American culture in general.